So as we are slowly coming out of this pandemic and try to get back to a life, whatever that means after the pandemic, question will be, what would it take for you to live a really, really good life? What would need to happen? What do you need for a good life? Yes, for the pandemic to go away would be one thing. Would be really good if that goes away and we could, you know, go back to life as normal. Would be one question that, well, one desire that we would have, that I would have, to say that would make life certainly way easier. But there are many other things that would be part of a good life, at least from the perspective where you are and what you may have experienced. Relationships, if they could be restored. If my family could get together and, you know, forgive one another. If I would better off be financially, that would be great. If I could find a job again, that would be good. If I could move on in my career, that would be awesome. If my health would be better, and I could do more things, that would be great. How about if I would be more fit, physically fit? I could do more, could hang out with my grandchildren better and, you know, keep up with them. How about spirituality? If I spiritually could do better, oh, that would be great. Well, the thing, there's also many elements, you know, that we could add into that and say, well, this would be great if I could improve in that area. And all of this is actually on the table. It is available. You can actually pursue that. It's not that it's out there and you can't pursue. You can do something about it. You can do something about it. But my question often is, why are we then often not happier when we have it? In fact, I think just when you watch the news, and recently it dawned on me, I watched the news about some things that were going on in Africa there, and I just had to think about it. I mean, we have here in the Western world, in Canada, we have everything that we just can think of. We can buy what we want. We have no shortage of anything. Why are we not happier? Why are we not happier? And if wealth would be the key to be having a good life, why are the wealthy people not happier? Why do they commit suicide? Why do they have to run into some stuff that is not really healthy for them and or for others? During this COVID crisis, we were often told that restrictions are in place or imposed on us because what they do is based on science. Just to find out after a while that the science is maybe not as solid as it was sold to us. One of the examples is even wearing face masks. You know, at the beginning, nobody talked about it. All of a sudden, now everybody talks about it. Science may have changed. But people change, and you adjust to the life around you, and our mind plays a major role in how we feel, in how we live our lives, in how we perceive our lives, and even how we can cope in certain circumstances. It's my mind. If my mind was occupied in these last several weeks with watching the news and the numbers increasing and decreasing, and always carefully watching how the COVID virus is progressing, I would bet that your life was pretty much reigned by anxiety. You know, anxiety was just part of that. You know, we see the numbers rise, okay, oh, I have to be more careful. If your mind was preoccupied, as some of us here, with math, and you calculate the probability of getting infected by the virus, you may be more easy and say, well, you know what, probability is very low that I would ever get the virus, so I can be quite happy in these times. See how much my mind plays a role in how I act and what I do? those realities that I create for myself dictate my decisions. Your mind, your thinking, how you perceive life dictates your decisions and how you live. I want to pick up today where we left it off 16 weeks ago at our first online service when we talked about Psalm 23. And we had a brief introduction into this psalm. I have lived now with this psalm for several years. Living means like to make it part of my daily life, part of my daily routine to memorize this psalm, to pray the psalm, to live in the reality of this psalm, and to find out how is this psalm really working, truly working in our lives. So as I said, we'll pick up where we left it off, and it's 16 weeks ago. You may have forgotten all of this, what we have shared, and that's okay. We will just pick up some of the things and move on from there. But before we do that, let's just look at this psalm again and just read through the psalm and let it speak to us in a new way. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right path for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is an amazing piece of poetry. It is, you know, it has this kind of power that when we read the psalm and when we hear the psalm, that there is something that the psalm radiates that draws us into it. It's just some kind of contentment, of peace, of well-being. And it's not without reason that many times when we are grieving and when we are at funerals that we read this psalm. Because it does this to our souls. It washes over us and we find contentment there. We find peace there, just knowing the Lord is my shepherd. I have everything that I need. He leads me beside still waters. He gives me food every day. You know, he gives me leads me through green pastures and leads me beside quiet waters. We sense that this psalm, this poem that it was written thousands of years ago, somehow has power to it. It's almost, I would say, divine power that's in this psalm. It's almost right to say it cannot come from a human being, but it did. It came from David, most likely. But there's something to those words that cannot be improved upon, that is just so powerful and so strong, that comes to us, and we have to investigate, why is it that way? Why? What is it with this psalm? And that intrigued me in my journey. I said, what is this with this psalm? Why is this psalm so, what is the truth behind this psalm? What kind of reality is created with this kind of psalm that helps me to live my life? How can we tap into this kind of peace, into this kind of contentment that is expressed in this psalm? In the midst of a crisis, in the midst of my own reality and my life. And the first thing that I would say, and here comes now a challenge to us. It's a challenge that I had even in my own life, that we ask some very critical question. Is this true? Is this true? You see, sometimes we take those Bible texts and we just assume, oh, it's a Bible, it's true. And then we live in a kind of dichotomy where we live in a spiritual world and we live in the real day-to-day life, and then we try to somehow separate this, because in my day-to-day life, it might be really hard to say, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. Is this true? Is this true of you right now? Or do we have to say, not sure. Not sure I can say it that way with such confidence. Or you may even say, yeah, right. That's good for David, you know, but my life is totally chaos right now. I'm going through hardships. I go through physical challenges, health challenges, financial challenges, family challenges. You have no idea. I cannot say that I have everything that I need. You know what I want to do this morning and with the next series? I want to challenge some of our very basic Christian assumptions that are sometimes very simplistic but not true. Whoa. But I do, because I have wrestled to them myself. And I'm still wrestling with that to find those truths. For example, God will answer all your prayers. Just go to prayer and pray. And I want to ask you, has it worked for you? God has answered all your prayers? Really? Am I not? Just trust God and all things will turn out well. Really? How's it working for you? Don't be anxious about anything, but pray about everything. Easy thing. And if you do it, all the anxiety will be gone. That may work for others, but not for me. On the other hand, you may have to admit, I do suffer from anxiety. I do have fear. I do face a major health crisis right now in my life. I do worry about my job and about my finances. I do see my marriage falling apart right now. I am challenged by rebellious children or a dysfunctional relationship. I am being bullied right now at work, at school. I do suffer depression. I do feel rejected. I do have social anxiety. I am grieving the loss of a loved one. And on the list goes. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. Does it really make sense? See, I want to challenge us sometimes with those simple sentences and see, how does that work? What often happens, and I said it before, we often live in this dichotomy of two different worlds. There is a spiritual world when we go to church, and everything of that is true. Because we admit to that, we sing about it, we have worship about it, and we say, oh, God is so great, God is so wonderful. And then I enter those doors, and I leave these doors, and I'm in my world, and nothing is like that. Nothing is like that. It's chaos. It's challenge. It's hard. And I pray sometimes and nothing happens. And I live in this world where I struggle. And then I come back to church and say, oh, yeah, everything is fine. Wonderful. We can worship the Lord. How do you compute that in your mind? In your head? Isn't that not often a challenge that we live this kind of life in two different ways? You know, and what often happens, and I'm not one to attack anyone. I talk about myself. How I struggled with all of that. What often happens is that worship and coming to worship is a drug. You go there to be pumped up again for the next week, and then you make it through the week, and oh, next week is worship again, and we come together, and oh, it's all so good. I mean, how was it for the last several weeks that we had COVID, and you couldn't come back to worship? How did you survive? Did you need this drug, or could you survive without it? It creates this dependency, or others are then conference or something, or we just jump from one to the next and have our high and our, and then we go through our day-to-day life. It's a daily grind. It's not like that, as we often confess, and we try to make it through until we have the next good experience and we are all there together. So please don't get me wrong. I'm not against worship services at all. I speak about your and my heart and where we stand and how we live our Christian life, and that I want to tear away this dichotomy that we often live in, these two worlds, the spiritual world and the real world, and that can often then happen that we actually are two different people. I've experienced this so many times. You know, you come to church and you meet the people at church, and they're the most gracious and the most nice people. And then you meet them at work. Oh my goodness, what happened? That's disturbing to me. Very disturbing. How we can be in those different worlds. And what often happens, and we never dare to ask serious questions about our faith. Because we feel like, if I do, everything will fall apart in my heart. And if I do it loudly, people will have doubts about me and my journey. And they say, oh, maybe you're not really a Christian. But, you know, let me say one thing. Who cares? Who cares what everybody else thinks? You need to live your life before God, straight up where you are. You need to live your life honestly. And if you are not able to ask those questions before God, then I think I would not go with this God. If this God is not big enough to deal with my question, my doubts, I don't want to serve him. I don't. So how is it working for you? How does it all resonate with you? Did I ask or did I shake your faith now and you feel like, oh, he puts everything away and puts the rug under my feet? The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. What does that mean? Well, I would suggest the following. First of all, let's look into the life of three people. Well-known people that if you're in church long enough, you will know them. And I would say, how does it look like? How is it working for them? Let's start with David, the one who said this. What was his life like? Probably a life of health and wealth gospel. You know, where wealth, the heavens opened, and health and wealth was pouring down upon him, and he said, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. Really? Well, some biographical details. David was being hated and abandoned by his siblings early on. He was fairly young when he was recognized as the new king of Israel. His family hated him. He was hated and hunted down by the king whose life David saved several times. But he hated this life. He literally ran for his life for many years. Have you ever been there that you have to run for your life? Somebody actually really wants to kill you? He lived in caves, another threat to be killed. He himself committed adultery and eventually murder, having his own son scheming against him, chasing him out of his palace, and he ran for his life again. Later on, his son was viciously murdered. His family was in chaos, especially the last part of his life. And here he stands before us and says, the Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. There's another person in the New Testament who made similar claims. When he was offered financial support while he was in prison, he says the following, Philippians 4. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Well, man, he must have lived a good life. How can he say, I'm content? Or in other words, I lack nothing. Listen to his own words, how he describes his life. You find it in 2 Corinthians 11. He said, I've worked much harder. I've been in prison more frequently, being flogged more severely, being exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was pelted with stones. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day on the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, in danger from false believers. I have labored and toiled and often have gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst, and I have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face the daily pressure of my concerns for all the churches. Who is weak, and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin, and I do not inwardly burn? I mean, what would he say, and how could he say? I'm content. I lack nothing. Can you imagine him bobbing in the Mediterranean Sea, clinging on a plank and say, well, I lack nothing. Really? Lastly, how about Jesus? Well, if anyone should be able to say that, the Lord is my shepherd, I have everything I need, it should be him. He should have lived a glorious life, a life free of all the burdens that we have and the struggles and the stress. But then you hear about him who was born into a poor family. He was a refugee in a foreign country for several years. He was under constant scrutiny from people who hated him. He faced death threats through the last part of his life. He was misunderstood and misinterpreted most of his time, rejected by his own family and the people who grew up with. He was betrayed by one of his closest friends. He was taken a prisoner, accused of a crime he didn't commit, and he would be put to death. How could he say, the Lord is my shepherd? I have everything that I need. Or even claim to say, I have come to bring the full life. So one thing becomes clear. If they all mean what they say, then to lack nothing cannot mean that they were healthy and wealthy and that everything went smoothly in their life. I can't think we can agree upon that. In fact, they faced hardship maybe bigger than we have ever faced in our life. So how is it that we read this text? Is it not sometimes with our underlying expectations how we read this text to make out of it what it doesn't really say? And then run into problems. That we sometimes say, if the Lord is really my shepherd, then this shouldn't happen. If the Lord is really my shepherd and takes care of me, I shouldn't run into those problems. I didn't have financial problems, marital problems, relationship problems. I shouldn't happen because the Lord is my shepherd. Isn't that what we often say? And when it happens, then our whole faith is in uproar and say, oh, how can this happen to me? If the Lord is truly there, just think about what you're doing. Just think about what you're doing in your faith. God becomes, and sorry for the word, the candy man. You know, oh, let's go here. You know, that's, well, he will do and take care of everything that I need, and then I will be fine with this again. If that would be Christianity, I don't know. So, as I said, we're just starting to introduce this psalm to us. And it's just beginning the journey. But the first that I would suggest to us, abandon self-sufficiency. It's the first thing we need to learn. Abandon self-sufficiency. Let me start with an illustration. If I want to visit my son, who lives in France right now, and say, I want to do it all by myself, I want to go and visit him in France, then you probably would tell me, good luck. Oh, you must be either a pilot or you must know how to steer a boat with a canoe. It's a little bit too far, you know, to paddle a canoe over there, and there is no landway to get there. Good luck. How to go there? How do you get there all by yourself? You can't. You can't. You can try. But I probably will fail miserably trying to do that by myself. So since I can't do this, I have to rely on people who know how to fly a plane, on people who are able to pilot a boat. And being on that journey, let's say I step into a plane, that plane can suffer turbulences. And turbulences even can cause injuries. You know, if you dive too deep, you know, in one of those nice experiences, you can be injured. You can break even limbs with that. But I'm still relying on the pilot to get me over there. Or if I take a boat, if you have taken cruises or be on a boat, and you have experienced 20-foot waves, you know how pretty uncomfortable that can be, even in a big cruise ship. You know how that goes up and down and everything goes haywire in the eating room and even in your bedroom, and how the danger is rising that you can actually be injured. I still entrust myself to a pilot and to a captain to get me through this. And I can still get hurt, I can still get stranded, I can still lose my luggage, I can still do all the other things that makes this journey very uncomfortable and very unpleasant. Maybe we have to read Psalm 23 with a similar mindset and say, the Lord is my shepherd. I am on the journey through my life. This life is not fair. That's what we try to tell our kids, get on with it. It's not fair. It throws all kinds of challenges at me. There are challenges the way I was born. Maybe in circumstances that were very unpleasant. Maybe I have a health defect. There are challenges because evil is real and I can be the victim of evil or crime, or people are evil and selfish and insecure and hurt me. There are health challenges, cancer is real, chronic diseases are real and often are not healed. There are challenges of losing loved ones through various circumstances. There are challenges, and these challenges are real as I journey through life. I can get hurt. They will leave their marks. I can even lose my life. But in my journey through my life as a Christ follower, I have come to realize that I cannot do it alone. I can't do it alone. I can try, like this crazy idea to get to France from here without any help. I can try, see how far I can go. Or I can try and enlist to some people who claim to be able to help me. But I'm not sure about their credentials and how they really are able to do that. So my journey as to life has to take someone that I can rely on, that I can trust, who will bring me through this life. So what it means that I have to abandon self-sufficiency, I have to admit that I can't do it myself, I can't manage my life myself, I have to put myself into the care of a good and capable, how about shepherd? How about putting myself into his hands, who does his job well and who goes with me and goes through with me through the rough spots in life? I might get hurt, I might get sick, I might lose loved ones, I might suffer loss, but my shepherd goes with me, even though I walk through the valleys of shadow of death. You are with me. You get that? The valley of shadow of death are not taken away, they are not moved aside, they are real, you're walking through them, but you walk with me. And I know that he will not abandon me, nor leave me. Is it now that I can say, I actually lack nothing? I'm still safe. Even if life goes upside down, because I have a pilot, a captain, a shepherd that walks with me, and I'm okay. Even if the worst things in life would happen to me, I'm still okay. This is a bold statement. But I cannot make any sense other than that and say, I can only say that if I understand what life is all about, that he is my shepherd, and if I know that he will go with me through my life, the competent, capable shepherd, I'm okay. No matter what comes, I'm okay. Let life happen to me, I'm okay. So, and what I want to close our thoughts this morning with is, therefore, what do I need to do? The first thing I want us to do is keep the shepherd on your mind. Keep the shepherd on your mind. See, we can do wonderful things with our mind. It's one of the greatest gifts that God has given us is our mind. See, I often go for a walk. That's how I often unwind and get my head straight and my mind straight. And there's so many things you can do when you go for a walk. You can do either put your headphones on, you know, and you listen to music and you're totally with your mind in the music and you listen to the worship music. That's great. You can pray. You can use your mind, you know, to pray as you walk. You can think through certain problems, you know, when everything is a big knot and all of a sudden things become clear as you walk. Or you can focus on your senses, which I often do, then just focus on your hearing. And you hear the birds singing and different birds. Or you look at, you focus on your eyes and you can see certain things that you never really noticed. And you just go for smells. And you just go and walk. And while you do, you focus your mind. And you can do that. God has given us this capability of focusing our mind. And our mind is not something that is just there working on its own. I and you, we have control over our mind. We do. I would say this a little side remark. If we have a free will, I think that's where it is. Where our free will is, we can think what we want. And out of our thinking comes action. Our mind is free to think. And you can train, and listen to the word, train your mind where it's focusing on, where it's anchoring on, where it's living, in which reality your mind is living. And if I say focus or keep the shepherd on your mind, then maybe that is what we need to learn, that as we go through life, keep your mind anchored on the shepherd, who walks with you, who is capable. And here I want to go back to the 16 weeks ago where we focused on who that shepherd is. So you may need to go back and listen to that again, but focus on who is the shepherd. It says, Yahweh is my shepherd. Not anyone, Yahweh. The big God who led the people of Israel out of Egyptian slavery. The big I am. Yahweh is I am. The God who is always present. The God who is never being created. The God who is ever there. The God who is all powerful. The God who is on your side. The God who can walk with you. A God who is with us. Then who can be against us if he walks with you? So what are you going to do? What's your journey like right now? What challenges are you facing? What worries do you have? What fears are on your mind? Wouldn't that be a good way to do? Let's focus on the shepherd. And he doesn't promise you that he will clear the way in front of you and you will have no problems at all, that you will be healthy and wealthy. It doesn't say in the word anywhere. But he promises to be with you, to care for you perfectly, as a good shepherd would do. He will protect you. He will help you. Not cleaning everything up, but he will go with you even through the darkest valleys. The Lord is my shepherd, and I will submit to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will submit to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, and I will walk with him through this next week. Will you do that? Just take a look at this video that might summarize what we have just talked about.